Welcome to Influencer Marketing for Destinations, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Influencer Marketing for Destinations, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. We are very excited that you're joining us today for another episode here in 2022. Today's episode is going to be extremely important for both influencers and destinations to learn about. And we have a very amazing guest on with us today. Jacqueline, I'm going to hand it over to you so you can do a little intro of the guest that we have with us.
Yes, I want to introduce Courtney to you all. He is an amazing lawyer and he helps Relic with a lot of our legal efforts. So Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Wonderful. Well, we are so excited to have you here. And I know we have so many questions for you. And before we kind of hop into our influenced segment and the deep dive and all the things we have scheduled for today, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about yourself and all of your credentials?
All right. I'd be happy to. So yeah, my name is Courtney Raymond. I'm an attorney. I'm licensed to practice in Utah. I've had a variety of different practice areas over my career. Currently, I am working with a law firm in northern Utah County called Ballstead Law Firm. We primarily do bankruptcy and consumer protection work. But for the last few years, I've also, I'm Colby Raymond's brother at Relic. And so I know Colby and Adam very well. So I come in and I help out on legal issues that come up with Relic and all that they do. And so I do have a relationship with Relic. It's been an ongoing relationship for quite a few years. Previous experience, I've been general counsel for companies that have done widespread sales across the country of nutritional products and other things like that. And so and we've also done a lot of outsourcing to other countries. And with that, I've got a lot of experience. I've sat in on for the specific topic today, I've sat in on FTC investigations and have experienced those firsthand and kind of watched that process go through multiple times. And so I have a lot of experience in that area. But like I said, right now, currently doing consumer protection stuff when it comes to bankruptcy and debtor protection and enjoying doing that work and helping people out that way.
That is so interesting. Well, yeah, we're so excited to have your expertise because there are so many questions that a lot of influencers and destinations have when it comes to influencer marketing and all those FTC guidelines.
Exactly. Yep. So we're very excited for today's episode. But before we jump into our deep dive, let's kind of talk about our hashtag influence segment. If you're new to our show, this is where we talk about where we've been influenced on, you know, specific platforms, whether we've been influenced to buy or do certain things. And we kind of share the power of social media with this segment. So Jacqueline, would you like to kick us off with that?
Sure, I'd love to. So I know I've mentioned it before on the show, but my husband is a music influencer. And so over the Christmas break and the past month or so, and really it takes a long time. So we've been doing it for a while, but we've been designing him a music studio so he can use it for his YouTube videos, for Instagram, and just a lot of the assets that he's creating with different music industry companies and people. And so we have been using Pinterest and a lot of YouTube for inspiration. And so I thought it would be interesting just to talk about that because we would go to YouTube to look at different influencers there, whether they were videographers, film makers, and things like that to see what their studio setups were like. And then we would go to Pinterest to find those shoppable pins to see what kind of products we would like, or bookshelves, or really anything from the big furniture pieces down to the fake plants and the books and stuff to fill his shelves and even lighting. And so it's been a really big project, but it's been really fun to use other people's examples as our influence and to really build our own thing as well.
I think that's so neat. Especially, we talk a lot about the power of Instagram on our podcast, but it's cool to recognize that there are so many other social media platforms, including Pinterest and YouTube, that really influence us, right? Just like your example, completely designing a music studio for your husband and using YouTubers and Pinterest influencers to help you design that. So I think that's really cool. Courtney, do you have anything that you would like to share, whether, you know, you've been influenced to buy or influenced to do something recently because of social media?
Sure. You know, we all are, it's been extraordinary to see the rise of social media as an influencer platform over the last, I guess 10 years. Is that what we're going on now, where it's kind of become maybe 15? Mm-hmm. You know, I was in law school and it seemed like Facebook was becoming a really, really big influencer destination, and kind of watching that progress. Now I have children and I watch, and I have older children. So my oldest is 16. And so most of the influencers that I interact with are just ancillary when I'm kind of watching what's influencing and prompting her to do shopping, whether it's dresses or shoes or clothes. And I'll just kind of, you know, in the background, kind of see what's kind of influencing her. My son's the same way. He's 14. And we spent, you know, 20 minutes last night just going over the new Nike shoes that are all, you know, all popular. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at these prices and I'm like, these are outrageous. But I'm also seeing a desire from him to obviously, you know, purchase and participate in this. And that's because of seeing whether it's celebrities or other people in, you know, in other influencers, you know, wear these products on their pages, and then the kids see it, whether it's YouTube or whatever, and they start kind of passing it around, and everybody else sees it, like, I want that $250 shoes, right? And so that's kind of where I am. We're going to be building a home in the next year. I know that my wife spends a lot of time on Pinterest and Facebook looking at, you know, home building techniques and other stuff like that she's going to want to incorporate in the house. And she shows that to me, and, you know, I'm the type that I'm like, well, I don't know if that's going to, you know, that's going to work, you know, with mm-hmm. what we're doing. You know, I kind of have a negative reaction sometimes to it, but it is something that's influencing her in the way that she's interacting with the build process that we'll be building our home with. So it's a real part of all of our lives. It just is. It's constant and it's always there.
That's so true. Yep. It's very true. Thanks so much for sharing. And that's cool that you guys are building your home. It's very neat. Let's see, for my little piece today, our little family, we're going to be doing some international travel this year. We have not gone international for many, many years, due to obvious reasons. So I've been definitely researching a lot on Instagram and Pinterest specifically about where we want to go. We want to definitely get out of the US, and figure out some good places. So my segment isn't what we've been influenced to specifically buy, but more do. We've actually decided on a few different destinations as like our top picks for 2022 to see where we want to go. And that's thanks to influencer marketing, mainly on Instagram and Pinterest. So we've decided that we want to try out Portugal and Tahiti this year because we were reading a few blog posts about it thanks to Pinterest. Influencer marketing on those social channels can, right, lead you to buy things, but it can also just lead you to do things, which inevitably will lead you to buy some things too. but that's my little piece today.
It's amazing how it's a full circle, right? You know, mm-hmm. you may not intend to really act or do when you're looking, but inevitably you'll find something and it'll lead to something else, and then you'll get a group of friends to do it or something. And it's funny how it works that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's so true.
Well, that's awesome. And thanks everyone for participating in that Influenced Ha segment. And if our listeners, if you want to participate as well, comment on our social posts. I know we're always posting there and we'd love to hear how you've been influenced as well. And so as we dive into this deep dive, we have a lot of questions for Courtney today. We've got questions on behalf of influencers and we have questions on behalf of destinations because we realize that the legal implications for each one of these parties is going to be slightly different. And so let's start with some questions on behalf of influencers. I think the first question we have for you is, should an influencer get their contract with a brand or an agency checked by a lawyer for every campaign? I know sometimes this may be nerve-wracking for a lot of influencers, especially if they're beginning. But what's your legal advice there for us, Courtney?
This is a hard question, and here's why it's a hard question. Because as an attorney, I look at all of my clients that I work with right now, consumers or whatever, and I see a desire, obviously, to make a living and have money, all right? And to be able to do the things you love, and then in this instance, like an influencer, to be compensated for that, right? I mean, there's a deep desire to do that. I also am an attorney, okay? And I have seen the negative results that are frequent when people aren't careful about entering into a relationship, okay? Whether it's, you know, this type of relationship we're talking about, an influencer and a destination, or whatever the contractual relationship is, there's negative aspects of that can happen. And we all, you know, you hear the horror stories and you think, oh, that will never be me. And then when it's you, it's really sad. And so my initial response is, of course, every single contract that you enter into with somebody, a lawyer should probably look at that and make sure that you are appropriately protected. One of the things that we've seen during the pandemic, which is a reality, it's just part of our daily lives now, is looking at these force majeure clauses in contracts, and all of a sudden they became applicable, right? For years and years, attorneys have been putting these in, and just so everybody understands what a force majeure clause is, it's essentially a contractual out that we place in contracts for unexpected events, right? And it allows the parties to return to where they were before the contract because of an act of God, wars, pandemics, those types of things, right? Those types of contractual language, we for years have put them in these contracts, not really expecting them to be activated. And all of a sudden we're in a pandemic and they're active. And if you don't have a good force majeure clause in your contract that's been reviewed by an attorney, we've seen some fairly I've seen some fairly significant challenges raised, some money lost in those instances. And so I guess, you know, that's a long answer to a short question, but yes, you should be having them you're reviewed by an attorney. Now, there's a cost associated with that, right? And we have to deal with that cost. If you're a new beginning influencer and you're entering into a contract with a destination or some sort of marketing company or whatever, you have to assess whether the cost-benefit analysis is such that I can spend $500 to have an attorney review this contract, or whether, you know, my take on this contract is going to be low to get started, such that it may not be worth it. I'm just going to enter into the contract and just go with the flow. And so, you know, the long answer, the short answer, however you want to look at it, yes, they should be reviewed. But, you know, the practicality dictates that maybe in some instances, read through it, do your best, go with what your gut tells you, but know that, you know, there could be negative ramifications down the road. And that's just kind of how you have to look at these relationships. They're complicated and difficult, and law has made them that way, but it's also a remedy for, you know, resolving disputes. And that's why we do contracts, is to prepare for the dispute, right? You know, the handshake deals are a thing of the past, and we have written contracts now to help potentially resolve disputes.
That's great to know. And I definitely love that advice, right? Like, if you can, yes, always have a lawyer look over it. But sometimes, right, the cost of having a lawyer look over it may be equal to or greater than the cost of what you're actually getting paid with this brand collaboration. So you definitely want to look at those two pieces when you're considering hiring a lawyer. Courtney, another question that I have got for you is, if a brand doesn't specify the FTC regulations inside the contract, does an influencer still need to disclose compensation or that they are working with the brand and agency?
Yes, great question. So let's just kind of back up a little bit and kind of understand what we're talking about when we're talking about the FTC, okay? Mm-hmm. The FTC is the Federal Trade Commission, all right? And they're very, very blatant in their description of what their job is, okay? And they're, you know, the Federal Trade Commission's job is to protect American consumers. And you think about that and you think, well, that sounds like a really, really good thing. When it comes to running a business and selling products and services, however, there are many, well, you know, every product and service is going to receive some sort of scrutiny from the Federal Trade Commission at some level, okay? They're going to look at it. And the reason they're going to look at it is because they have a complaint website set up where you just, if you're a consumer and you're not happy with your product, you can go file a complaint. And that can initiate an investigation. Okay, so the Federal Trade Consumer, and they have a lot, the commission has a lot of power in their ability to do investigations and to bring cases against people. Mm-hmm. And so this overarching power, this essentially, it's like a police power that has been granted by legislative intent here in the United States, gives the FTC a lot of power when it comes to investigating when consumers are harmed. And because of that, and the other thing you have to remember is we're all, you know, I feel like I'm a reasonable consumer, okay? I go into a transaction, whether it's going to the grocery store and buying food product, whether it's going to a store and buying clothing, I have a reasonable expectation that the product's going to meet the expectation that I have for it, right? But I also understand, you know, I'm a reasonable person, that things happen. And, you know, you may go buy a pair of Nikes, or you may purchase a dress based on something you saw on the internet, and it may come to you and it may not fit the way it's supposed to, or the stitching might have come out. And I understand that that's the way it is. The FTC, however, is really looking at the lowest common denominator when it comes to consumers, okay? They're protecting everybody. And some people aren't going to be reasonable about their expectations with a product or a service. And because of that, we see a lot of activity by the FTC when it comes to trying to protect the consumer, because that's their job, is to protect consumers from, you know, fraudulent claims. And when it comes to influencers, obviously, there is the FTC has issued guidelines that essentially say if you're an influencer, you have an obligation to disclose whether you're receiving compensation for the products or services that you are advertising as part of your influencing marketing that you're doing. And there's guidelines about how much of a disclosure there's required to be made. My general advice is be upfront with people in posts made or whatever about what you're doing, and that you're being compensated for providing that. Now, some influencers are, you know, maybe posting about products or services that they're not being compensated for the claims that they're making. As long as the claims that they're making are reasonably understood to be true, then obviously you're fine there. But if there is compensation being made and there is a contractual agreement, then a disclosure does need to be made. And we can discuss about, you know, how much of a disclosure is required. But like I said, being upfront and being clear and concise with your disclosure is essentially required. We've seen a lot of people try to hide disclosures in hashtags and in descriptions of videos and stuff like that. If scrutiny comes down, if there's complaints made, the FTC is going to look at that, and they're not going to look kindly upon those types of disclosures, as opposed to a disclosure that's made in the actual advertising material, whether it's a YouTube video, an Instagram post, a Twitter post, a Facebook post, where the disclosure is made therein. So that's kind of the position that we're looking at, where the FTC looks at these types of situations. And again, they're going to be proactive. The influencer marketer is huge and it's growing. And a lot of the products that we see influencers promoting are the types of products that the FTC is already looking at very closely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's true.
And that's another thing. You know, I have a lot of experience doing working with nutritional supplements. Okay. And the trick with nutritional supplements is they're not reviewed by the FDA. I mean, the FDA doesn't come in and look at those. But what the result is people will make fairly outlandish claims when they're, you know, pushing nutritional supplements. And we've seen a lot of that, especially in the last couple of years in reaction to the pandemic. You've got, you know, this nutritional supplement that people are saying will cure COVID or protect you from COVID or whatever. And those are not appropriate claims to be making because there hasn't been appropriate studies done on the product, right? The FTC is all over that kind of stuff. They are looking at that really close. So if you're an influencer and you're promoting a nutritional product, it's like the double barrel shotgun is looking at you, right? And so you better keep in line your disclosures. Otherwise, here comes the FTC. They're gonna come and have a really, really close look at it. And that's the last thing you want to do. They're super thorough. They shut people down, and it can be a real negative.
That is awesome. Thanks. Yeah, that was a fantastic answer. Just very thorough. Thank you for that. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, a question that I had that's really interesting, especially I think from a destination's viewpoint, but from the experience of an influencer, that I often have questions about is when an influencer goes on a trip and they have a contract with the destination, obviously they perform everything according to the contract, they go on the trip, they make the posts, they do all the disclosures, everything goes according to plan, but the collaboration ends. And if an influencer wants to post about that destination again, do they have to disclose the previous relationship because they did have a past contract? Or because that contract is ended and complete, are they okay to just kind of post about their experience in general? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand the question. And I'm going to give you the famous lawyer answer, right? You ready for this?
Right.
It depends. Okay. And I know, and I work with clients all the time, and they look at me and they're like, how is that an answer to my question? And I'm like, well, there's a lot of things that are dependent. Okay. Now, if it depends on the destination. Is the destination a specific company or product or service, right? Was it a hotel? Was it a, was it very, very specific and the relationship was specifically with that place? A repost later on in that situation with that product or service would likely require some sort of disclosure. I've been compensated previously to provide this type of, influencer statement or whatever it is, right? If it's just more general, like I was talking with family last night about, Savannah as a destination city or whatever, and you repost about Savannah or the beaches in Savannah or something like that, then of course it's so general that reposting about some sort of relationship that you had with even the city of Savannah or whatever as an influencer for that marketing destination, the post is so general that requiring disclosure would be unreasonable at that point. Okay. And so it really depends on how specific the disclosure is going to be and required to be and how specific, the post or the influencer statement would be. And also it's important to remember that we do have a previous contractual relationship that we have to be conscious of, okay? Many times you'll see in contracts some sort of clause that requires additional disclosures or additional compensation or other things made even after the contract's over, or some sort of protection against disclosing certain information or something after the contract's over. So that's something else that will need to be considered as well. You may want to go make a post, an influencer may want to make a post about that destination or whatever again, and they may need to pull out that old contract and just make sure there's nothing in the contract that says or controls what type of post or statement that they make. And it's important to remember that ultimately when it comes down to this type of stuff, the relationship between the destination and the influencer is contractually based. And that's one thing that we've seen over and over again in this country is the courts and judges' complete belief that first and foremost, the contract's going to control the relationship between the parties. And so it's important to look back at that contract, and you may have to pull a contract out from 3 or 4 years ago and see, do I still have some sort of obligation in this contract that even though the relationship is over, there's some sort of carryover protection in the contract that I still have to comply with? And that's an important piece to keep. And what we do as lawyers is if there is those types of obligations and we review a contract, guess what we do? We throw those on a calendar. Okay, we put them on a calendar out there so that we can then let our clients know, okay, the obligation that you have is now done, or if they have a question about it, we can quickly look at the calendar and be like, hey, you've still got potential obligations that are past what you thought was the end of the contract. You have to make sure that you're complying with, otherwise you're going to be in breach of the agreement.
So interesting.
That really is. Thanks for clarifying that. Slightly shifting gears a little bit, let's talk about intellectual property and copyright, specifically for influencers that they need to be aware of. This is a pretty popular topic within this influencer marketing world. So can you touch on that in regards to posting? Like what should influencers be aware of when it comes to intellectual property and copyright when they're about to, post on Instagram?
Right. Great question, because I think that we're all, we kind of live in a society where if you want to throw up in your personal social media page, you want to throw up a logo from a company, you just kind of feel like, well, what's the harm, right? And, I'm getting that logo out there. I'm helping that company. And maybe we don't completely understand that there is actually, legal protections for the actual logo, right? We think of the famous logos that we see, like, Coca-Cola or Nike that we see all the time. And those marks do have trademark protection, okay? And our ability to use those marks is based upon the mark holder or the mark owner granting some sort of license or right to use. And so, again, we kind of have to look back at agreements and look at the agreements that we see. I know that as part of my preparation for this, we see work for hire a lot as kind of a tagline. And then what you'll also see is in these agreements, typically when you're preparing to do something like make a post or whatever, there may be in the agreement some sort of grant of protection for the use of marks or copyrighted material as part of that post. Okay, the agreement will lay that out, and typically you'll see language like a worldwide, non-exclusive, right to use the mark for a limited time and for the purposes of this contract. And that's typical language that we see. It's kind of, it gets more legalese than that, but you know, the short is the destination is going to grant a right to use that mark or copyrighted material for a limited time and for a limited purpose, and complying with that is important. If, you know, you're in a situation where maybe that hasn't been designated or stated, that would be something that needs to be clarified. It really, really is something that needs to be clarified, because the last thing you want to do is violate a trademark or copyrighted material and deal with getting a cease and desist letter or something like that, even though you're in some sort of relationship with the destination or whatever. And dealing with that, I know that I have clients all the time that will send me that type of stuff. And they're like, well, what is this? Like, I've received a cease and desist. You know, how big of trouble am I in, right? Mm-hmm. And as attorneys, we use it as a way to kind of, this is the warning shot, you know, we're coming after you unless you stop right away. And so typically it's a type of thing where if you quickly, you know, stop, you're okay. But, you know, destinations and other businesses have a right to protect their intellectual property. And they're going to do that if they feel like your use of the intellectual property is violating either the terms of the agreement that you have with them, or just in general is violating their ownership of that mark or that copyrighted material. And so making sure that you're clear on that. And like I said, most contracts are going to address that, and you'll see it in the agreement. It's going to be the part of the contract where you've read, you know, payment terms, you've got down to those sections, you're like, I got this, I understand this. And then it's going to start talking about confidential information and confidentiality and use of stuff. And that's where, you know, people that aren't used to reading contracts, you start to feel a little bogged down, especially when the paragraph you're looking at is like a page long, right? And you're like, do I want to read this? Do I need to read this? And that's usually where we stick the language about having a right to use the copyrighted material, whatever. And so, again, that might be a section where it might be good to run it past an attorney, or at least somebody that has experience reading contracts like this, so they can be like, yes, you are free to make, you know, posts that include copyrighted or trademark material as long as you do it within these guidelines or whatever. And again, you'll have certain companies that are super proactive about protecting these types of things, others that maybe aren't. But we always need to assume that you're walking into an agreement that needs to be kept when it comes to protecting intellectual property, because there's so much value in it. Intellectual property is so valuable now that protecting this is very, very important to businesses that own expensive and valuable intellectual property.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Like, your answers are amazing. So if you guys are listening to this episode, be taking notes, because all this information is extremely valuable for influencers, especially listening right now.
Yeah, I can't agree enough, because I think there have been a couple past relationships or collaborations that I've worked with where you can tell the influencer hasn't read the whole contract. So please, please listen. Please take this advice. It's so important. And I know we've got a few questions for destinations now that we'll kind of transition to. I know when it comes to a destination, what trouble can a destination get into legally if an influencer does not disclose or follow the guidelines? Because I know there are two separate parties, but obviously there's a contract in place there. So what can happen?
All right. Well, I'm going to speak from experience here working with the FTC. Okay. And again, remember, we have to go back and look at what the FTC's goal is. Their job and their goal is to protect consumers. And when we talk about consumers, again, we're talking about the lowest common denominator of consumer, right? We're not talking about sophisticated consumers. And we all put ourselves in different categories. I mean, there are certain products that I am definitely the lowest common denominator consumer when it comes to, you know, researching and purchasing that product, where I could easily be misled by somebody making a certain statement because I just know nothing about the product. And so I have to rely on somebody like an influencer statement about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So again, we have to remember they're trying to protect the consumer. All right. Destination, you know, it feels like as a destination, you're probably like, oh, I think I'm okay here because my influencer has a responsibility to be responsible and do it. And I have a contract with them that says if they violate my contract, I'm okay. And we're absolved of this. There's a limitation on liability if the influencer violates the agreement or does something that's against the FTC's rules or guidelines, we're okay. All right. But experience says that the FTC is going to be very, very thorough in any sort of investigation that's prompted by this, okay? So as a destination, you have almost as much responsibility as the influencer to be monitoring and policing these relationships. And it sounds like, well, that's a lot of work. If I have a lot of influencers that I'm dealing with, you know, how do I do that? Well, that's part of the deal. And the FTC is not going to come in and say, if they had entered an investigation, oh, that was too much work for you guys to monitor this. I'm sorry. You know, we'll just do away with this investigation. We're good, right? That's not how they're going to look at it. They're going to look at the destination. They're going to be like, okay, you have the resources. You have the financial backing to be able to monitor what your influencers are doing if you're going to enter into a contract with them and pay them to do that. You have some responsibility here as well. Now, how much responsibility that's going to be is going to be determined by FTC and potential courts if there's an investigation. But it's very wise as a destination to be closely monitoring what's happening. Because again, if things go poorly and misrepresentations are made by an influencer that damage consumers in a substantial way, the FTC is going to be knocking on the door of everybody that's involved in that relationship, and you will be part of the investigation. Liability may be limited. Again, the contract may protect the destination to some degree, but no destination wants to be involved in some sort of investigation. They always are public, and so it can be bad press, and so it's important to monitor it. Plus, the destination, again, we just talked about, you know, intellectual property, the destination obviously wants to protect that intellectual property, whether it be logos or copyrighted material or whatever it is. And if you don't monitor and don't, you know, control what the influencer is doing and don't kind of see what's going on, who knows what they could potentially do? Who knows the type of harm that could potentially be done to a brand or other intellectual property by an influencer that goes rogue and starts kind of causing issues. And so it's important for destinations to understand that they do have an obligation and a duty and really an ownership interest in protecting, you know, their intellectual property and the agreements that they have with influencers in a way that makes sure that the, you know, the FTC is not going to get involved. And if the FTC does get involved and there is an investigation, that the destination is like, okay, hey, we were monitoring what was going on here. They had this one rogue post that got out of control. When it happened, we shut it down. We did everything we could, as opposed to letting something run rampant where misinformation is being shared and consumers are being harmed.
That fantastic answer. Once again, thank you, Courtney. All of these are spot on. So going back to, you know, if a destination or a brand wants to, you know, reshare that influencer content from a campaign that they were hired to do, what do they have to do to, you know, tick those legal boxes?
Well, obviously, in any type of resharing opportunity, we're looking at what does the contract say, okay, and their ability to do that. And, you know, the influencer, and I believe I'm understanding your question correctly, but the influencer has their own ownership interest in the content that they create, right? And so they are creating content that they that belongs to them. And typically what we see in agreements and contracts is some sort of reciprocal licensing agreement that allows not only the influencer to share, you know, potentially trademarked or copyrighted information on theirs, but on the back end, to allow the destination who's paying the influencer to do this to also utilize the intellectual property of the influencer in some fashion, okay? That may be limited in time or in scope, but it does typically allow it to be done. And many times the agreement will actually make the influencer's work what we call, previously we talked about, the work for hire, where essentially the destination is going to become the owner of that work. The influencer's got to understand that that could be the possibility. And again, this is something that's going to be contract-based. Who owns that actual work? You know, who's going to be responsible for maintaining it and keeping it in the future? And it's something that, again, the contract is going to dictate most of that information. Where contracts don't cover that type of information, you know, that's where disputes potentially are going to be, are going to come up. But, you know, good practice in all of this stuff is open lines of communication. You know, a contract can be modified. Provisions of a contract can potentially be waived if both parties agree to a waiver in that of that provision. It's just a matter of, you know, are we getting our ducks in a row when it comes to making sure that the destination is protected, the influencer is protected, the content's protected in a way that everybody kind of agrees to, and then the content can be shared and disseminated as everybody agrees to in a way that, you know, benefits the influencer, benefits the destination. And again, these are win-win agreements, right? I mean, everybody hopefully is going to win in these agreements. We're not, this isn't a winner loser type of agreement where somebody's going to end up, you know, unhappy with the end result. As long as communication's appropriate, the contract terms are kept, good contracts are written, you know, influencer is going to benefit, destination is going to benefit, and the sharing of the information that's created will benefit everybody in positive ways. And so again, making sure that the contracts are adhered to, the agreements are understood and maintained is really a critical point of this. And as a destination, as you look at this process, you got to go into it thinking, okay, are we hiring this influencer to create content that we are going to own, right? Or are we hiring this influencer to go out and do their thing and promote our product or service or whatever, our destination, in a way that we love and we appreciate, but they're going to own most of it. And all we're going to do is give them some sort of royalty-free license to use some of our branding or whatever for a limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. And understanding that process is important from the destination standpoint is, what are we doing with this agreement and how far is it going to go? And understanding that and then communicating that with the influencer and the destination and getting everybody on the same page is really kind of the key to making it the win-win that we all hope that it is.
That's such a great answer. And I love that because it really is a win-win, and that's what we want. And that's the whole point of influencer marketing. And I think despite all of these potentially scary regulations and potential negatives that could occur, I think it's still really, really awesome for influencers and destinations and brands and services to collaborate and to work on this together. So from your perspective, what advice do you have for destinations and influencers to either keep up with FTC changes or to enter into these collaborations positively?
The short answer, I'll give you the short answer, and I'll give you the long answer, because then you can listen to the short answer and turn it off the podcast or whatever if it's taking too much time, because you've got content to create, right, as an influencer or destination. I mean, that's the most important thing. Short answer is get a lawyer, right? If you can afford it, get an attorney, have them run everything past you. Most of destinations are probably going to be in a position where they either have a full-time attorney or a team of attorneys, or they're going to have in-house counsel or whatever it is, they're going to have access to legal services that should help them and protect them. And it's important that legal counsel is being proactive about making sure that they're keeping up on the changes in the FTC regulations. That's easy. The FTC has a website. You go to the website, occasionally review the information, review some of the decisions by courts, and you can keep yourself apprised. From an influencer's perspective, I think it's a little bit different, and here's why. Most influencers are probably not going to be in a position to keep an attorney on retainer. Cost is just probably going to be prohibitive there. We're in Utah here. Our attorney fee rates are fairly low compared to most of the country. But I mean, you're looking at $300 an hour, at least for fairly good counsel, $300 to $500 an hour for good counsel. That's a lot of money, especially when a lot of influencers, you know, may be doing contracts where they're getting a few hundred dollars a month or whatever. It could be very, very small. And if that's the case, then that doesn't make sense. As an influencer, I think you do have an obligation to at least apprise yourself of the basics of the FTC and just understand the basic principle of this, okay? You've got millions of consumers out there, all right? And you're trying to reach as many of them as possible because that's going to be better for you. It's going to be better for the brand and the destination. All those consumers are coming at the product from a different perspective, and being cautious and careful about presenting products, services, destinations in an appropriate and true manner is obviously the most important thing. We don't want to ever be in a situation where there's a misunderstanding that leads to a consumer filing a complaint. So as an influencer, first and foremost, just think in your mind, okay, I'm a pretty reasonable person. Is the statement or advertisement or whatever I'm creating, or the content I'm creating, could that cause an issue if my grandma came across it or somebody that I know that doesn't understand this area of marketing at all, or area of product or area of service at all? If they came across my statement, would they take away from it what I'm hoping that they do and what the destination hopes, or would there be a potential misunderstanding? And if we kind of put ourselves in the reasonable person mindset, for the most part, we're going to be okay. All right. Mm-hmm. That's going to lead to, you know, content that's created that's going to be appropriate. The FTC is not going to have any issue with it, and you're going to be fine. Now, as you grow and as an influencer, as you get bigger, get an attorney, turn them over some of this stuff, you know, get them on a retainer or just hire them by the hour, send them a couple hours of work a month, and they'll be happy to help you out. Or even less than that, you know, I'm happy to review contracts that come across that, my desk on a case-by-case basis and just by an hourly basis. So from a destination standpoint, use your legal counsel, make sure that they're up on the guidelines and the rules the FTC has. From an influencer standpoint, you know, just be reasonable and be a little bit cautious as you're getting started maybe. And then as you build into it, obviously bringing legal counsel on later on is always advisable.
That's fantastic. Well, Courtney, thank you so much for all of the amazing, amazing advice and information that you shared today. Jacqueline, do you have any more questions for Courtney before we wrap up this episode?
No, I don't. Courtney, this has been so amazing, and I know our destinations and influencers listening today will find it beneficial.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure being on here. I will say one last thing. You know, I work with a lot of people, a lot of clients, and ultimately the goal in business is to make money, right? I mean, that's why we do these things, and to provide amazing services and destinations and stuff. And so I always, the last thing I tell my clients is I'm like, you know, be cautious, be careful, but go out there, do what you love, find joy in doing it, and don't let concerns about the FTC or the local government or whatever bog you down to the point that you lose your love for what you're doing. It's going to be okay. Even if you do get investigated by the FTC, most of those investigations end in some sort of settlement that is reasonable to all the parties. And so don't let a fear of potential ramifications of this stop the good that can be done from a destination standpoint, from an influencer standpoint, and all across the board. Go out, enjoy what you do. Try not to be too fearful of potential legal ramifications. We talked about a lot here today, but don't let that fear override the ability to enjoy what you're doing and to make money doing what you're doing so that you can continue doing what you love to do. In 98% of the instances, nothing bad's going to happen. And when it does, there's usually reasonable steps that can be taken to resolve potential issues. So I would just leave that with everybody. Remember that is kind of the ultimate goal is to enjoy what we're doing, to love what we're doing, to make a living so that we can continue doing what we love. And don't let fear of intervention kind of slow down that process or allow us not to act.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Courtney. That was fantastic. Yep.
Yeah, this has been so fun, and I know all of our listeners today could potentially have more questions, so if you do have questions for Jess or I, you can follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest, and you can also email us as well. We'll have that in the description for you. And then if you have questions for Courtney, we'll have his information in our description as well so that you can contact him and let him know if you have specific questions for any scenarios you're experiencing. So thank you, everyone, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. This has been another episode of Influencer Marketing for Destinations, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Jess and Jacqueline and produced by Relic.